Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I've been reading consecutively through first canto, second canto, third canto. I'm going to continue in third canto. Raghupati Pran. My goodness, Hare Krishna. So nice to see you. So, third canto, chapter 22. And the final three verses of that chapter, which are 37, 38, 39. And the title of the chapter is The Marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And too bad the marriage is over, party's over. There's a wonderful description in covering two chapters, of chapter and a half, where so many things are discussed, so it's hard to do a little summary. But one of the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam is the Manus and the descendants from Manu, Manvantar, and their descendants. Which means, like, the history of the world, history of the world, history of the universe, practically. Sarga is the creation of Lord Vishnu. This Sarga is the sub-creation of Lord Brahma. And after Lord Brahma creates, he didn't just leave it empty, he populates the place through Prajapatis, the fathers of mankind, and he gives law by which, or means by which, they can relieve themselves from material existence and return to the spiritual world, which, according to Srimad Bhagavatam in Canto 3, Chapter 5, where it's the description of Sarga, the creation of Lord Vishnu, there's a purpose. The purpose of creation, so just quick, twofold. Mahavishnu is lying in his state of yoga nidra. Yoga nidra means Rama Devi, his internal potency, is within. Think about it. Pictures that you've seen of Mahavishnu, where's his internal potency? You don't see her. You see Sitaram, Lakshmi Narayan, Radha Krishna. Where's Mahavishnu and his consort is named Rama? She's within. He can manifest her without, but he can also manifest her within. And within, he's enjoying transcendental pastimes. He's very creative and very versatile. Yoga Nidra means he's enjoying pastimes within. And while he's enjoying his pastimes with Rama Devi, at the same time within his transcendental body, during the period of cosmic annihilation, all living entities are resting in a dormant state, or susupti state, a state of consciousness that's like being anesthetized, where there's no sense of. Because time is withdrawn from the creation, the karma of the living entities is suspended, because you need time to move karma. And when time is withdrawn, the living entities, the whole cosmic manifestation comes to a screeching halt, and the living entities are again withdrawn within his body, and they're in a resting state. And he desires, in a compassionate way, two things. Those living entities, they're in this anesthetized state. Their ultimate happiness their constitutional, natural, sublime state of consciousness is not active. I wish that happiness for them. That's all he does. He just has a compassionate desire. And then everything else happens. And the second is, while he's enjoying with Rama Devi, there's a reflection of Rama Devi, who is sometimes known as Chaya Devi. Chaya means shadow, or Pradhan Maya, the material energy in a dormant state. And he knows that she wants something to do. She wants some service. And he feels compassion for her. She should also have some service to do. That's all. Compassion for the living entities, compassion for Chaya Devi, and the whole thing begins. Like, you know, God said, let there be, and so it was. Only there's a little detail in between. So the living entities are within this, they're not embodied yet. They need someone to provide them bodies. Lord Brahma is supposed to do that. He does that through the Prajapatis. That's what Lord Brahma does, the sub-creation. And one of those Prajapatis is Manu. He not only creates good praja, or offspring, he gives the means, the laws of Manu. Manu Samhita gives the laws of mankind whereby they can A and B. They can fulfill their material desires, and more importantly, they can progressively restore that blissful consciousness that's constitutionally theirs and go back to Godhead so that the purpose of creation can be fulfilled. He does both. So this description that his appearance is also very interesting. Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa appeared directly from the body of Lord Brahma. He didn't take any assistance from his wife. You know any men that can do that? Brahma can do that. He's not like one of us. And not only from his own body they were produced, but they were already in their mature adult stage, ready to go. Because it was for service to Mahavishnu, or his Garbhadakshay Vishnu, his first expansion, to populate the universe. So, from the first of the 14 Manus, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, there were 2 sons and 3 daughters. Priyavrata and Uttanapada, we hear in the 4th canto about Uttanapada and his son Dhruva and all of that. But in the 3rd canto it's described one of the eldest of the 3 daughters, Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akuti. Nice sounding names. But Devahuti's marriage took place with Kardama Muni. Kardama Muni was one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma. In fact, he was number 11, although there was 10, because he was born from the shadow of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma requested Kardama Muni, please assist me. I've created this nice universe, now I have to fill it up with nice living entities so they can go back home, back to Godhead, by performing their prescribed duties properly and fixing their mind on the Supreme Lord. So, please assist me. And the response was, yes, sir. And so, to qualify himself to produce good praja, it's easy to produce praja, but to produce qualified praja that can go back to Godhead, that requires special consciousness. So, he went to the forest to qualify himself. And for around 10,000 years, that's what he did. Of course, their duration of life in Satya Yuga was 100,000 years, so that's like one-tenth of his life. Go to the forest for 10 years to qualify yourself before you produce children. so that they're good children, good offspring. Only Kardamomani was not only obedient to his father and very, very qualified in the process of achieving perfection in that age, which was meditation. He was a great devotee. Such a great devotee that he had as his desire to have as a son the personality of Godhead. Anybody you know has that desire? And has the qualification to make it happen? Kardamuni had that desire. Vatsalya rasa, parental affection, towards the personality of Godhead. He was a very elevated personality. And in the course of his being in the forest, doing his preparing to be qualified to produce good praja, Lord Vishnu appeared in front of him. Beautiful description. With Garuda flapping his wings slowly, Lord Vishnu standing on his shoulders, smiling radiantly at Kardamomuni, with the symbols of Vishnu in his arm and his flashing happiness from his face and his eyes. And imagine how Kardamomuni felt. He was just overwhelmed. He paid obeisances before Lord Vishnu, stood up, because Lord Vishnu was in the air, he stood up and offered beautiful prayers. Lord Vishnu spoke to him and said many wonderful things. Among them, he said, in 2 days, well, first he said, you have satisfied me very much by your pure devotion, so I've come. Just to give pleasure to you, to reciprocate with your devotion. Then he said, I know your heart, and your heart's desire will be fulfilled. You desire to have a qualified wife, so you can assist your father in service, and in 2 days from now, she's going to arrive here with Swayambhuva Manu. This is like a really good arranged marriage. You don't have to get all mental about it. And she's as qualified as you are. And here's her qualifications. And you should say yes. And you will have 9 daughters. And then I will appear as your son. And don't worry, you won't become entangled, because you'll fix your mind completely upon me while performing your household duties. And by such a result, your consciousness will become progressively, as if it wasn't already, more and more and more and more perfect, and at the end of this life, you'll go back to Godhead. See you later, Kardama. So, he knew how his whole life was going to play out even before it happened. And sure enough, 2 days later, Swayambhuva Manu came. There's a very important and very attractive description of how to receive, how a brahmana, qualified brahmana, and a qualified kshatriya reciprocate with one another. Prabhupada gives it a term, brahmacharya, where there's mutual respect. Not, you know, I pat your back and you pat my back, and that kind of thing, to genuine respect for the qualifications and the service being performed by both individuals. Sometimes there's pride, and sometimes there's pride, and that cuts respect. I'm a brahmana. I'm the king. So pride doesn't help. Pride destroys everything good. So in case of Kardama and Swayambhuva Manu, they don't have any of that. And so they exchanged conversations. Kardama spoke first, and then at the end, after appreciating the exalted qualities of a qualified person like Swami Bhumanu, he said, you come here for some purpose, and whatever it is, the answer is yes. Here's a blank check, here's my signature on it, you can fill in any amount you like, kind of thing. And Swami Bhumanu stated his purpose. And Karamuni said yes. I mean, there was a number of things back and forth. And so right there in the forest, marriage took place. And exchange of gifts. Of course, what does Karma need gifts? He's a sadhu living in a forest. But royal gifts were given, kind of like, you know, dowry, that kind of a situation. And then Swami Bhumanu, embracing his daughter, cried tears of affection for his daughter, feeling now separation from her, but having performed his duty, he felt happiness and separation at the same time. Spoke some words to her, and he departed, and he went back to his capital city, Varhishmati. And the city is described as opulence, and as he was leaving the herbages of Kardamuni, it described he saw the natural beauty of the forest where many other sages were also residing, just the natural beauty of unspoiled, opulent, natural settings. And his heart was attracted, but his duty was that of a king. So he went back to the royal palace and the capital city. And that opulence is described, and it's a different kind of opulence, like Vrindavan and Dwarka in contrast or comparison. Big opulence. And he wasn't attracted. He was satisfied with the arrangements, but his attraction was to the personality of Godhead, and he very similar to the description in the ninth canto about Ambarish Maharaj. He didn't really care for his opulence. He used it in worship of his deity and in fulfillment of his duties as the king. His royal treasury was used in that way. But he wasn't attracted to it. It was just service to Krishna. So, we get a close-up picture of, I'm going to read a few of the verses, but a close-up picture of, well, essentially, it's a teaching of how to go from sakam bhakti to nishkam bhakti. What does that mean? Sakama, sa means with, and kama means material desire. Devotion with material desire. And to get to the place where devotion, where there's no material desire. There may be things, but there's no material desire. And there may not be things, and that's okay too, because nishkam, no material desire. So how does one function like you're going to have a nice temple one day? Krishna's mercy, you'll have a nice temple one day. Now you have a simple place who's, you know, trying to be the enjoyer of it. We're doing services. And when there's an opulent place, maybe one wants to be the enjoyer of it. I'm in charge of this service. I'm in charge of that room. You know, little turf consciousness, territorial power thing. So he's the emperor of the universe. He's got lots of power and lots of opulence. But his interest is in his activities of service to the personality of Godhead. And as a result of that, so I'm now going to read the final three verses. And we'll go back because these final three verses are repeating something that was said in the earlier verses. Here's text 37, 38, 39. The person speaking is Maitreya, if you're familiar a little bit with third canto of Bhagavatam, Maitreya heard the entire Uddhava Gita, Krishna speaking to Uddhava just before he departed. Now, Uddhava Gita appears in the 11th canto, but it mentions it in the 3rd canto. And sitting by the side of Uddhava, hearing Krishna speak Uddhava Gita was Maitreya. And Maitreya previously was a vastly learned mystic. By the time he finished hearing Uddhava Gita, he was an Uttama Bhakta by association with Krishna. And so Vidura was told before Krishna left, I mean, left means he left the planet, he told Maitreya, very soon Vidura is going to come and I want you to explain everything that you've heard. Explain it to him, that's your service. And Krishna left. So Vidura came and Vidura asked like 3.5 cantos worth of questions. And that's just what we have recorded. I'm sure there was more than that. So Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. He's explaining all of this of Swayambhu Manu and Devahuti and Kardamuni and the whole thing. Therefore, O Vidura, how can persons completely under the shelter of Lord Krishna in devotional service be put into miseries pertaining to the body, the mind, nature, and other men, and other living creatures? Those of you that are readers of Bhagavad Gita, you're familiar with these terms in Sanskrit. Kleshas, adiatmaka, klesha adidaivaka, klesha adibhautaka, klesha. Sounds familiar? Miseries caused by the body and the mind. Miseries caused by other living entities. Miseries caused by disturbances in nature. So the statement is, those who are fixed in Krishna consciousness, completely under the shelter of Lord Krishna in devotional service, how is it possible for them to be put into miseries? Purport. Every living entity within this material world is always afflicted by some kind of miseries pertaining either to the body, the mind, or natural disturbances. Distresses due to cold in winter. Of course, here it's nice. It's comfortable in winter. It's severe heat in summer. Yeah. Always inflict miseries on the living entities in the material world, but one who has completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in Krishna consciousness is in the transcendental stage. Semicolon. He is not disturbed by any miseries, either due to the body, the mind, or natural disturbances of summer and winter. He is transcendental to all these miseries. And two more verses that don't have purports, and ends the chapter. In reply to questions asked by certain sages, he, Swayambhu Manu, out of compassion for all living entities, taught the diverse sacred duties of men in general and the different varnas and ashramas. There's some things that apply to everybody. And then there's things that are specific to this varna and to that ashram. They gave vas, or teachings. I have spoken to you of the wonderful character of Swayambhu Manu, the original king, whose reputation is worthy of description. Please hear as I speak of the flourishing of his daughter, Devahuti. End of chapter. So there's mention here in verse 37 about transcending the threefold miseries. But it's repeating something that came earlier, and I'd like to read those verses again. The Manu's come back, he's left the forest, he's back in his capital city, his citizens, yay, Manu's back, and you know, royal reception, and bards, and minstrels, and musicians, and long live the king, you know, big fanfare. So what does he do? He goes to meditate on Krishna. Manu spread a seat of kushas and tashas, certain types of grass for meditation, and worship the Lord, the personality of Godhead, by whose grace he had obtained the rule of the terrestrial globe. Having entered the city of Barhishmati, in which he had previously lived, Manu entered his palace, which was filled with an atmosphere that eradicated the three miseries of material existence. There it is again, text 32. So Prabhupada writes, we cannot stop the miseries of material atmosphere, but Krishna consciousness is the antiseptic method to protect us from being affected by the miseries of material existence. For a Krishna conscious person, both living in heaven and living in hell are equal. How Swayambhuva Manu created an atmosphere wherein he was not affected by material miseries is something that would be very valuable for us, right? Anyone afflicted by miseries? Not at all, right? Okay. Let's hear what Swayambhuva Manu did. He enjoyed. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor. And early in the morning, every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. Thus Swayambhuva Manu was a saintly king, although absorbed, apparently, in material happiness. He was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna-conscious atmosphere. Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, which is really long, I'll give you the numbers in just a minute, his long life consisting of a Manvantara era was not spent in vain, since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down, and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. So, anyway, it goes on. At the end of life, commonly, it's frustration. Because you can't do the things you used to do. You still, the desire to do those things is there, but the machine doesn't work. Those that are older know what I'm talking about. And those, you know somebody that's older, you know what I'm talking about. Because, and it's so, the desire for enjoyment doesn't stop, it's just the machine doesn't work. I'm sitting in a chair because I have a knee problem. It's called meniscus tear. It's like, you know, the shin bone and the thigh bone meet, and there's this thing, cartilage, and it keeps it moving nicely, but it rips. And so, I can't walk properly. Anyway, so the orthopedic surgeon said, you don't need surgery, you need physical therapy. And so I went to a physical therapist, and they started moving this and that, and said, well, okay, I'm going to give you a set of exercises to do, but I would like to know what is it that you would hope to achieve from physical therapy. He said, well, I'd like to be able to walk up and down the stairs not like an old man. I can't even walk up and down the stairs. I said, okay. What else? I don't know. I'd like to just function normally. Well, like, you know, do you want to back out of the tennis court and play tennis? So, no, that's not that one. Okay, well, you know, tell me what. So I thought about it. She was saying, asking it seriously. I said, well, you know, next year I'm going to be going to India. She says, oh, I have a friend that's going to India too. She's one of those kind of people. And where are you going? And I said, well, I'm going to a special place. It's the land of Krishna, because I'm, you know, dressed like this. It's the land of Krishna. And it's a very nice place. And there's this special part of the land of Krishna. It's a sacred hill. And I want to be able to walk around that sacred hill. It's about 14 miles. I want to be able to walk around that hill and feel the presence of the hill and not the pain in my knee. That's what I thought. I said, very good. I'll tell my friends, what's the name of the place? Vrindavan, land of Krishna. Okay, I'll tell her to visit Vrindavan, land of Krishna. And what's the name of that hill, sacred hill? Govardhan. Okay, I'll tell my friend. So for a while, you know, like almost a year, I'm doing these, you know, you're supposed to do 30 of those, and so many of those, and so many, anyone that's done physical therapy knows what I'm talking about. And it was really, it's hard to do 30 of those and 20 of those. But I was thinking, I want to walk around Govardhan Hill. Then it was like, it was easy. It's just meditation on Govardhan Hill. And Krishna's mercy, I was able to walk around Govardhan Hill. I went to Vrindavan Parikrama, or Yatra, and Govardhan, all around Govardhan, all day long, took the whole day, along with everybody else. I was able to walk the whole way. And it was blissful. It was blissful. It wasn't like, yay, I did it. It was just very blissful. I didn't want to ride in a rickshaw and wave to people as I was going by. Just so, one of the keys of Swayambhuva Manu's blissfulness was there wasn't a sense of proprietorship. Where does the sense of proprietorship come from? It comes from a misconception of self. It comes from false ego. Connected with the false ego comes a misconception of mine. I and mine go together. One flows from the other very naturally. So supposing I think of myself as a spirit soul part of Krishna, what's mine? Well, material things aren't mine because they belong to Krishna. And if they belong to Krishna, I'm utilizing them in service to Krishna. So what's mine? I can't say the body is mine. That's going to be taken from me. As far as even the soul is Krishna's energy. Parapakriti, it says in Bhagavad Gita. So what's mine? One thing is mine, that's my relationship with Krishna, that's mine. Our acharyas say, in the state of full self-surrender, atmanivedana, full surrender unto Krishna, Krishna is mine. Not in the sense like, put him in my pocket, walk down the street, I've got Krishna in my pocket. Not like that, but in the sense of relationship. Not a proprietary sense, but a relational sense. I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. So, Swayambhuva Manu had that consciousness. So because he had that consciousness, he was protected. Say it the other way around. One who's thinking in terms of I and mine, they're really vulnerable. Not only vulnerable, they get slapped around by the material energy. And, you know, we all know what that is. That's the miseries of material existence. So it's not that, as long as you have a material body, you're going to have a knee problem, or you're going to have a something problem, and an aging problem, and a dwindling problem, and a death problem. But if you're Krishna conscious, you won't have a rebirth problem. If your consciousness is fixed upon Krishna, that's the state you will attain, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So he was busy fixing his consciousness upon Krishna, although Krishna made arrangements for a very qualified wife and a fantastic opulence and big position. But he didn't use his position and his opulence and his wife for sense gratification. It was just it was a setting for a facility for service to Krishna, just as you have here, a facility for service to Krishna. So see it that way, and then you utilize it that way, and then you keep it clean and keep it repaired and, you know, etc. You utilize it for one purpose only. Make it nice for a service to Krishna. And you utilize, this is an important principle, that which Krishna gives you, if you utilize it very carefully in service to Krishna, Krishna sees, oh, here's somebody that doesn't waste anything. They're very careful in how they use things. They're a good custodian of my opulence. Let me give them some more. And then the person doesn't think, yay, I got some more. They think, here's an different opportunity for service to Krishna. It's not like competition. Well, you know what I'm saying. Enjoying. I won. Now I've got more. I've got something bigger and better. Is simplicity or opulence are both the same to a devotee. We want to offer something very nice to Krishna if Krishna so desires. And we make efforts to do so. I just heard something from Badrinarayan Prabhu today. I was having a conversation with him about some service. He told me something that I didn't know. Prabhupada had, of course, he had a desire to build the Vrindavan temple. And many temples in the world, including the New York temple, were involved in sending funds to Prabhupada from their Sankirtan collections to help Prabhupada build Vrindavan. And I know for sure that Prabhupada did certain things. Well, I was, one of my two hernias came from doing, just carrying loads of books and going through the subways and distributing books in the subways of New York, and he sent all the money to Prabhupada, which he used then for purchasing the Jew property and building the temple. But what I didn't know, Badrinarayan said, was Prabhupada sold the spiritual sky business. You ever heard of that? Spiritual sky? Incense and scented products? It was huge. But Prabhupada wanted that temple so much, he sold it, or he directed for it to be sold, and the money from its sale to build the Juhu temple. Now the Juhu temple is producing lots more than that spiritual sky business was producing. But it's he was utilizing what Krishna had given him, not in the sense that I'm the proprietor, but it's something that Krishna has given for Krishna's service, that's all. And, you know, because he used it wisely, Krishna gave him more and gave him more. So much. And the same principle applies for anyone else, whether it's household or temple community or ISKCON or whatever it is. It's the principle of not being attached in a proprietary sense, but being very careful with what Krishna puts in your hand, that you don't regard it as, now I have something, but it's as Swayambhuvamana, facility for serving, and you use things in that way, and you're miseries may come, but you're not afflicted by them. They don't cause woe is me because I've got a bad knee. I may not be able to walk around Gobert on Hill, or maybe I may not be able to walk up and down stairs, or whatever else it might be that some affliction comes. A car accident, and I've got to wear a face ring right now. Whatever affliction comes, we take it in stride because here's some, in one way or another way, it's an opportunity to recognize the impermanence of things of this world and the necessity of fixing my consciousness upon Krishna, because this is just a reminder of the whole thing going to be gone at some point. Krishna is very kind. He's helping me, prepare me to fix my consciousness upon Him. And one, so the point is, in these verses, in different ways, it's saying the miseries don't become afflicted. When one comes to the final stages of life, there's pain in the body as the body gets older and dwindles and so forth. It's not just breaks down and it's over. There's pain. And he was, Swayambhu, his consciousness was fixed. Even the dwindling of the body was there, the happiness through utilizing senses that worked, that didn't work anymore because of age, didn't disturb him because his consciousness was already fixed upon Krishna. And he continued doing those things, hearing, praying, remembering, chanting. Things that your consciousness can do, if you do it carefully now, when your senses are strong, when the senses become not so strong, that's a great spiritual resource available to you. And then the misery of old age is superseded. So, last thing. There are several places in the Bhagavatam, this is one of them, where apparently, like Dhruva Maharaj is the classic one, where one goes from Sakam, Bhakti, I want a kingdom, and Vishnu can get me a kingdom, so I'm worshipping Vishnu so I can get a kingdom. It's called Sakam Bhakti. And he eventually came to Nishkam Bhakti. So to understand that very carefully, how can that happen, is relevant to us. We're not going to go do the austerities that Dhruva Maharaj did. But we can benefit from the principle of what he did in Swayambhu Manu. I just completed a 25-hour, 13-part seminar on Sri Brahma Samhita. And it's only half. But in the last verses of Brahma Samhita, the same topic is discussed, where Lord Krishna, Govinda specifically, because Govinda is the one that Brahma has been offering his prayers to. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Jam. Govinda speaks to Brahma saying, again, I know your heart, and in your heart, along with these wonderful prayers that you've offered to me, there's a material desire. And you're concerned about this material desire may interfere with your devotion. So I'm going to explain to you how to fulfill the material desire without having your devotional perfection be influenced or diminished. It's a big topic, isn't it? Five verses. Look at them sometime. And embedded within these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are the principles that are discussed there. There's one verse of those five verses where Krishna first he describes what pure devotion is, and then he says that the state of pure devotion can be attained in a gradual way, like incremental, step-by-step way, by three things. Sadachar, or acting according to theistic conduct, good behavior, follow the scriptures. And another is constantly striving inwardly. So this is, one is external, another is internal. Inwardly striving for self-realization. Not just doing something mechanically and haribol prabhu kind of thing, but inwardly cultivating self-realization. And self-realization is expanded, and it's God-realization. Because as Prabhupada taught, God-realization and self-realization occur simultaneously. As with the rising of the sun, one can see oneself. God-realization and self-realization occur simultaneously. They're not something separate. Self-realization without God-realization is not self-realization. And the third is constant practice, abhyasa. Sadachar, proper conduct, theistic conduct, guided by the scriptures, constantly striving for self-realization, cultivating and inspiring for self-realization, and putting these two together, stay with it, not intermittent, or anishtata, you know that phrase? Nishta is a stage of steadiness, and before steadiness is unsteadiness. Anishtata bhakti. So nishta, abhyasa, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. Constant practice. Practice. To learn to play the drum the way that you play the drum. Did you practice? Yes, Maharaj. There's a Bhakta Lee, who's African-American, about 27 years old, and he's just joined the Harinam Party. He was previously a professional musician. I met him this weekend. You know, dreadlocks, and that nice young man. And he got introduced to the drum. So he practices 6 hours on weekends. But he's, you know, when they're not out in Harinam. They're going Harinam 7 days of the week, 6 hours a day. And when he's not out in Harinam, he's practicing. You're sitting in front of the video thing. Because he's serious about it. It's not like, you know, tap, tap, blah, 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 and then tap. He's a musician. And do anything, you have to practice. Practice chanting the holy name attentively. Well, there's a nice practice to practice. So if you want to become good at something, you have to practice that something. Abhyasa. Practice striving for self-realization while always living within the codes of theistic conduct. According to what Krishna says to Brahma, that will take you to the stage of perfection. How quickly we move to the stage of perfection depends on how submissive we are to Krishna's words, our eagerness to get there. If we're complacent, progress will be slow. And if we're very sincere, progress can be very quick. So we have the resource within this wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the five most potent activities is the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing its message, associating with devotees. Krishna is providing you with the association of devotees who are striving in their Krishna consciousness. the chanting of the holy name, worshipping of the deity form of the Lord. And then the fifth one is reside in a sacred place like Orlando, Florida. That's not what the scripture says, though. Reside in a sacred place like Vrindavan. But if you can't reside in Vrindavan, then you make pilgrimage to Vrindavan and take Vrindavan with you in your heart. And meditate upon the residence of Vrindavan and yet your Krishna's pastimes through the agency of Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing from saintly personalities that are enriched in that mood, feeling of appreciation of the residents of Vrindavan and the associates of Krishna in his pastimes in the holy land of Vrindavan and Mayapur and Puri. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. As Guru Rukh said, thank you for coming on a Monday night. Part of your routine, but you're welcome, so I appreciate it. Thank you. Any comments or questions from this? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, how can we make the place of your worship, of our worship, like Orlando here, as good as Vrindavan? We have heard that statement before, that try and make the place of your worship.
Well, I'll answer your question by making reference to something that Prabhupada wrote way back in 1966, July. He wanted to incorporate the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And part of the requirements for incorporation is you have to give statement of purpose so they can evaluate, do you qualify for this category of a corporation? So he made seven statements of purpose for ISKCON. And one of them is build a temple in Orlando, Florida. But the way he said it was establish places of pastimes of Krishna. Now how do you, if you're Krishna, you go perform some pastimes and then you establish a place of pastimes. But how does ISKCON establish places of pastimes of Krishna? By doing what you're doing. When pastimes of Krishna are being performed, the very same things that we do are where Krishna is performing his pastimes. So we make the place a place of Krishna's pastimes. Any of you have visited 26 Second Avenue where Srila Prabhupada started the Hare Krishna movement? If you don't know what the place is and you walk into the place, you feel something. I once in this lifetime, so far, I visited Hawaii because Gottsal was the president there for years and it's a very difficult place to manage. But he continued and continued, and every year I saw him at L.A. Rath Yatra. I said, Maharaj, you got to come and visit. You don't get any visitors out here. So anyway, I went to visit. And I was staying in the room on the second floor, and I was, you know, chanting japa in my room, and went down to the temple room, because the temple room was directly down below. And as I was going downstairs, I looked to the right and there was a room at the end of the hall. The door was slightly open. And a devotee was coming back and forth with like an RT tray. And I was wondering what was in that room, an RT tray. So I opened the door and it was Prabhupada's quarters. The room was bigger than this, about this deep, but wider. And just walking in the room, it was, you could cut it with a knife. It was, the vibration was very, very, very palpable. Because Prabhupada spent so much time, at least the devotees in Hawaii say it all the time, Prabhupada spent more time translating his books in Hawaii than any other place in the world. And you can feel Prabhupada's presence there. But it's a place of a pure devotee's pastimes. And where a pure devotee of that caliber is, Krishna is there. So become a pure devotee and establish your place in Krishna's pastimes by worshipping him nicely. What's up? And then when people walk in, they'll feel, this is really amazing. The vibration is very nice. Anything else? Yes?
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for the wonderful giving us the class on the pet candle. And the question is about, in terms of anxiety.
Anxiety?
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Yeah. I'm not one of these.
What about anxiety?
So, when we are, especially the point you made about this karma, so when we are using our intelligence or whatever we have in terms of preaching, how can we...
Whatever we have in terms of preaching, when we use whatever we have in terms of preaching, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Like our intelligence, our... skills,
sure.
Methods, or
whatever gifts Krishna has given you, use them in his service.
Yes. So, how can we approach someone with a nishkam manner that we preaching him to her about Krishna consciousness or something good from, you know, from Bhagavad Gita, instead of expecting him to become a devotee or something like that? Like, is that a good thing or not a good thing? Do you expect that he will become attracted to Islam and come to a devotee level or something like that? Should we do that? Should we think of that? That's the anxiety I am having.
Do you have that anxiety?
Yes, I do.
You do. You think it's a good anxiety? Is there such a thing as a good anxiety?
Yes.
Yes. Is that one a good anxiety? No.
Yes.
Why? Why is it not a good anxiety? Because it's fruitive. When Prabhupada came to America, so you, that, this is not you, this is Prabhupada. When Prabhupada came to America, did he have any expectation? No? Prabhupada was carrying the order of his spiritual master. He said, even if no one came, I would have felt very satisfied because I was carrying out the order of my spiritual master. Of course, people came. And he was very... How was the right word? Conscious of results. But he wasn't results driven. He was conscious of results. And when there were some results, he wanted more results. One example that I vividly can remember was the number of... Before there were, like, you know, the kind of books that BBT has now, there was Back to Godhead magazine. And I remember he printed a large number. And then he indicated, you know, Boston takes so many, New York takes so many, Los Angeles takes so many, Montreal takes so many, and distribute them all. It was like a big number, so we distributed them all. Prabhupada said, very good. I'm going to double the printing. He kept doing it. Like, you know, how are we going to do it? How are we going to do it? In numbers, you know, quantifiable results. And send the money to the book fund. Don't just, like, keep it. Because they need to print the more and print more and print more. So... he was conscious of results, but he wasn't attached. The striving was to please Krishna and to please his spiritual master. He wanted to make an offering to Krishna and his spiritual master. Something that I can recall, I think it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. For a number of years, he was GBC in all of India. What a headache. one GBC for all of India. And he did it for a number of years. It was during lots of difficulty. He purchased the land in Mayapur when no one could, and he stayed in Bombay along with Giriraj Maharaj and got the land. And he was complaining, you know, I know all the codes of Bombay more than I know the verses of Bhagavad Gita. Because he was, you know, in a court battle. But it was an austerity. So all of that, and he asked Prabhupada, can I take a break from the service of GBC of India and go and preach in America? I have an idea of preaching with Vishnu John Swami. We're you know, we associated together in Los Angeles. We connect so well. And I'm sure we can make... So Prabhupada gave his permission. And in 1 year later, they brought before Prabhupada, seated in a room, you know, so many new brahmacharis with shaved heads and nice dhoti and shining faces. And Prabhupada said, this is the best offering you could make. You know, not just bring some money, but bring nice devotees. So he was conscious of results. But he wasn't attached. It was an opportunity to serve and to spread Krishna consciousness. So, same. Like, you know, one of the best ways to, like, liberate you from fruitive consciousness is book distribution. Because you can distribute a lot of books if you're fruitive, but it's not happiness. But if you distribute a lot of books, or not distribute a lot of books, when you're not fruitive, because you know this is pleasing to Prabhupada, you get lots of realization about how deep attachment is to results. And you get slammed all the time. People say no, get out of here, and different other insulting things. But then there's so many other people to say wonderful things, and you realize it's an opportunity to serve in a hostile environment, but there's some very innocent, sincere people in that hostile environment that really are wanting and needing, and otherwise they're not going to get this opportunity. So it's really inspiring just to do the service. And it really cuts the fruit of consciousness, I can tell you from experience. It's very nice, very purifying. But that's not the only cure, it's a nice one, a very effective one. But the adjustment is to be enthusiastic for the right thing. Carry out, to fulfill the desire of our founder Acharya. Not for your sake, that now I've achieved it, but as a service. And if it happens or doesn't happen, I'm sincerely striving. When that person that you're speaking with understands you want them to do something, then it's not going to be the same connect as when you're really concerned about them. Follow? Turn it the other way. When you're really concerned about the person, they're ready to go wherever you want them to go. Let's go chant japa. Yeah. Let's go, you know, to the kirtan. Yeah. Let's go study Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. When they know that, you know, you connect with them, you're concerned about their well-being. That's first. And it has to be genuine. It can't be, you know, cosmetic because I want to get a result. It has to be genuine. Something else? Okay, thank you all very much. Prabhupada ki. I came from the New York temple and yesterday it was snowing. And then it turned to sleet. Yeah. And then I was concerned maybe it would be freezing rain. But Satya told me, no, it's going to get warmer. It just turned into a light rain. So I was able to fly out. But before I left, I asked the pujari if I could get some Mahaprasad from Radha Govinda. And they gave me a box. Sangha is so before you all disappear, go wherever you